Welcome to Radio Sephirot's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sephirot's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, according to the Edict of Expulsion, what was one gastronomical reason given to justify expelling the Jews from Spain in 1492? Sarah Gardner is a Fulbright scholar who has lived in Madrid for the past year, researching the culinary heritage and cultural identity of the Sephardic Jews in Spain before 1492. Her work is focused on medieval Sephardic cuisine in order to understand Sephardic daily life and cultural identity in pre-expulsion Spain. In addition, she writes about the Sephardic history of Spanish dishes on her blog, Boca Dulce, and has taught a cooking class for the Reformed Jewish Community of Madrid, which explored the Jewish diaspora through the diverse global Jewish kitchens, covering everything from Ashkenazi to Ethiopian food traditions, learning about each community's history, and making their representative dishes. She also recently taught a class about Sephardic culinary heritage from before expulsion to the diaspora for the Gefilteria, a New York-based organization and subject of a recent English Corner program. Sarah spoke with us about her research and some interesting discoveries she's made about the gastronomical relationship between the Jewish, Christian, and Muslim communities in medieval Spain.
Thank you very much for speaking with us, Sarah. It's a pleasure to meet you.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Could you tell us a little bit about your background, where you're from?
So I am from Connecticut in the United States. I was born in New Haven, but then when I was very young, moved to a small town called Wilton, Connecticut, which is in Fairfield County, and have lived most of my life in the northeast of the United States. My town did not have a big Jewish community, so the synagogue that I went to growing up was actually in the town over. And then I went to university in Boston at Tufts University.
How did you become interested in Sephardic food? Are you from a Sephardic background?
No, so I'm Ashkenazi Jewish of Romanian and Lithuanian heritage. What I always say is I come from a long line of strong female cooks. I'm named for my great-grandmother on my mother's side, whose name is Sarah. She was a fabulous cook, and so is my grandmother Selma. And so I just grew up in a family environment where we ate dinner together every night. Food was kind of a focal point of holidays, of ritual observance, and every day. And so I've always been really passionate about cooking. It's my great love in life. But when I got to college, I was randomly placed because at Tufts, what they do is they kind of place students in freshman seminars so you can kind of get warmed up to the university life. And the seminar I was placed into was a class called The Aspects of the Sephardic Tradition, with my future advisor, Gloria Asher, who's one of the only professors, if not the only professor, I think, in the United States who teaches Ladino or Judeo-Spanish, which is the language of the Sephardic Jews, who mostly from the ex-Ottoman Empire region.
So this seminar, they just placed you into it? Did you say what you were interested in? Or anything?
Well, sort of in the pre-orientation process, you filled out a survey of like, I want to take this class more than this class. But really, it was totally random. I think I might have placed a class maybe like fifth on my preference list, because they offer a bunch of courses. So it was kind of random in that way. But at the same time, I started taking Hebrew, and I continued. I had taken Spanish for years in middle school and elementary school and high school. And so I continued with that. And it was this thing where I was taking these two languages. I was placed in this class talking about Sephardic culture. And for the final project for that class, I did this project that was kind of a mini version of later work that I would do about food in the Sephardic diaspora and how looking at the dishes of Sephardic Jews in different places, you can kind of understand the story of Sephardic identity in diaspora after expulsion.
Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, totally. So Basically, I come from the cultural studies field, so we talk a lot about texts, art, film, literature, and how you can read different media as texts of cultural identity. And I really like that idea, and I wanted to apply it to food because I think food is one of those things that when you look at it, you can tell the story of where someone's from, where they're going, what their psychology is, you know, what their family life was like, all of these things that are key elements of identity. But I had noticed when I was reading and doing various scholarship that, you know, there's a lot in the critical studies field about art, film, and literature, but there's really nothing about food. And so I kind of became fascinated specifically with the example of the Sephardic Jews, because in their diaspora after 1492, that is to say, when they were expelled from Spain, the dishes that kind of come out of the different diasporic locations really tell the story of the journey that the different Sephardic communities took to the places where they ended up and the story of their integration or their assimilation in those places. And so I sort of thought about it in a theoretical way of like you see a dish and it has this one part that is very Iberian, that very much comes from Spain, that speaks to that cultural legacy. But you also have this element that you can see and taste and feel that is from the places they settled. And the dish itself is the text, the medium through which you can understand how those different processes of retaining culture and integrating into other cultures work.
Can you give us some examples?
Yes. So there's the dish of the Sephardic Jewish culture is borekas. Everybody knows about borekas. They're Israeli street food now. And actually, they're a really great combination of the Spanish empanada that Sephardic Jews brought from Spain and the idea of wrapping something in an oil-based dough and baking it with the Turkish borek. Because around the time that the Sephardic Jews came to the Ottoman Empire in about like the late 15th century, a little bit before expulsion, but also after, the Ottoman Turks brought this dough from the other regions they had conquered called yufka, which is kind of like the precursor to phyllo. It's kind of a rudimentary phyllo dough. And so the Sephardic Jews who settled in the Ottoman lands, Turkey, Greece, Bulgaria, kind of took that idea of that dough and applied it to a dish that they were already making that kind of, if you look at it, tells a story of Islamic heritage, of stuffing things, of baking things in a dish, kind of that story. And then it also linguistically reflects the combination of a Turkish word, borek, with a Spanish ending, ah, so boreka. So that one to me is like a great example. And it's also kind of become one of the most symbolic foods of Sephardic culture to external people.
Tell us about your project here, because here you're studying Jewish food from before the expulsion.
Yes, exactly. So the shorthand way I say it is I study the culinary heritage and cultural identity of the Sephardic Jews before their expulsion in 1492. So basically, it's looking at the sociocultural context, the agricultural context, the trade context of Sephardic life before 1492, before they were expelled, and sometimes a little bit after too, because there are a lot of inquisitorial records referring to the Sephardic Jews afterward that you can also use to kind of reconstruct pre-1492 life, and using all of those things to kind of understand what the Sephardic Jews were eating and using that, how we can kind of understand the place of the Sephardic Jews in medieval Spanish society, which as you may know, it was kind of, some people say convivencia, a great living together that was tolerant and wonderful and beautiful. And some historians take the view of it being a very violent, anti-Semitic time. So it's kind of my way, using food, of understanding what the reality was, whether it was kind of convivencia, reconquista, or just in the middle.
Aside from the dietary laws, mm-hmm. was there a very big difference in the kind of food that the Jews ate and that the non-Jews ate at that time?
Yeah. I have two thoughts about that. So the first question is sort of like, how do we define Jewish food, right? Because dietary laws are like the most immediate thing that comes to mind when we think of like Jewish food, how we pick Jewish food out compared to others, so kashrut. But at the time, there was also a lot of Talmudic commentaries that were kind of shaping what different Jewish communities were eating and how they were supposed to eat, given like different prohibitions, like for instance on Shabbat of working, that changed how you could cook because you can't light a fire. But then also, for example, the place of the Sephardic Jews in pre-expulsion Spanish society were also really highly involved in agriculture and trade and were bringing different ingredients from all over. So that being said, there were foods that kind of defined the Sephardic community in comparison with its contemporary Christian and Muslim communities. For example, because of the laws of Kashrut, the Sephardic community wouldn't eat pig fat, pig lard, which was one of the main fats used by the Christian community, for example, except during Lent. Or there was a lot of overlap between Islamic food of the time and Sephardic food because the Sephardic Jews, as integrated as they were generally in Islamic society, in medieval Islamic Spanish society, they sort of took all of the ingredients that, you know, the Muslims were growing and had brought with them from the Middle East to the Iberian Peninsula. So then you have eggplant, onion, leeks, spinach, things that are still kind of defining characteristics of the Sephardic culinary repertoire today. But then on top of that, you know, they used olive oil, which some people say even that the Sephardic Jews brought olive oil and olive cultivation to the Iberian Peninsula. But at the same time, there were also dishes that they would borrow from the society around them that then would be used for, like, holiday celebration, for example. Like, on, I don't know, like, say, Hanukkah, they would fry buñuelos, like little donuts, but that was also, like, an Islamic cooking technique of the time. So Sephardic food was both kind of this independent thing that was defined by the rules of kashrut and holiday observances, but also borrowed a lot from the contemporary communities around it. That being said, a really great source that I love and I use a lot in my work is this cookbook that was actually translated by this man named Ambrosio Huici Miranda. And it's a manuscript of a 13th century cookbook from Al-Andalus. And it's a royal cookbook. It's what the chefs were making in the caliph's palace. And it has, out of like the hundred or so recipes, it has about six that are specifically mentioned to be Jewish. And so what I think is interesting about that is it really gives us an idea of what kind of the non-Jewish communities thought of, like, what they thought Jewish food was. So there's one recipe where the dish is cooked over a really low heat, but in the same dish, in the, like, Islamic equivalent, it's not cooked over low heat. So it's kind of this thing where there are certain techniques, maybe certain ingredients like citron shoots or other spices that defined Jewish dishes, like in that cookbook, for example, through which we can understand, oh, maybe this was what people understood Jewish cooking to be.
What other sources are you using? Are you using archives from the Trials of the Inquisition?
Yes, I use a lot because the Inquisition is this funny thing where there was a point in history where if you had eggplant and garbanzos in your pantry, it was enough to have somebody take you in for questioning by the Inquisition and to be potentially burned at the stake. That's how kind of dramatic food choices became, because food was seen as kind of the most tangible way you could say, hey, this person is Jewish, definitely. Besides, you know, lighting candles on Shabbat and maybe sweeping on Friday afternoon, kind of things that signal Shabbat observance. But even more than that, it was food, because at that point in time, Christians had such a quote-unquote different way of cooking and eating from Jews that it was an easy way to kind of determine who was Jewish. So interestingly enough, in inquisitorial manuals, you have entire accounts of Jewish dishes, Jewish menus, things that were enough evidence to mount against someone, like cooking alla fina, making albondiguillas, like meatballs, using Swiss chard, eating eggplant, that through which we can understand, oh, so these were the ingredients, these were the dishes that were associated with Jewish identity. So yeah, I use a lot of inquisitorial proceedings to do my work.
Is there anything else you can tell us that you've discovered?
Oh, wow. What a big question. Yeah. So I've discovered a lot. I think one of the things that is most interesting to me living here in Spain is that actually a lot of dishes that have become sort of classic Spanish dishes, dishes like cocido, tarta de Santiago, things like that, actually have a Jewish history behind them. And because of various historical and culinary narratives, that history has kind of been forgotten or left out of the description of the dish. But I think it tells a lot about like Spain's relationship to its Jewish past and the Jewish people generally, as well as kind of the lingering heritage that remains of the Sephardic presence here in Spain, because it was this beautiful, highly productive, incredibly vibrant minority group culture that existed before 1492, which has unfortunately kind of been erased, but it's still there and it still lives, just like you can see the Alhambra or see vestiges of the Islamic past. The Jewish past still lingers here too.
Tell us about your blog, Boca Dulce, and of course we'll include a link, but tell us about it.
Oh, yeah. So the name Boca Dulce actually comes from a Ladino saying that I really like that goes, Boca dulce abre puertas de fierro. Sweet words open iron gates. And besides it being kind of a life philosophy of mine, I think it very much encapsulates the story of the Sephardic Jews and Sephardic food and how important that food has been to maintaining and preserving a distinct Sephardic identity and a legacy throughout time. And so, and in many cases, it was actually the truth, right? There was this great story that when the Jews were expelled from Spain, Sultan Bayezid II, who was the Sultan of the Ottoman Empire at the time, supposedly sent a fleet of ships over to bring over all of the Sephardic Jews that were being expelled from Spain, and said, King Ferdinand has impoverished his country by enriching mine. And then, you have this beautiful Sephardic legacy that was then created in the Ottoman Empire, speaking Judeo-Espanol and all of that stuff. So I think it also kind of speaks to the truth of experience of the Sephardic Jews too. And so basically on the blog, I just talk about mostly Sephardic food history and especially what I mentioned about the Sephardic Jewish legacy of Spanish dishes. I'm kind of in my travels, like I went to Avila, for example, and saw one of the copies of the Edict of Expulsion of the Jews from Spain. And in the Edict of Expulsion, for example, there's this whole paragraph dedicated to the reasoning of why they were expelling the Sephardic Jews, saying that they were giving kosher food and wine to their already converted brethren, the Judio conversos. And so for that reason, we needed to expel the Jews because they were sort of manipulating the Judio conversos through giving them food. So just sort of things like that. And so I have a little bit of travel. There's a research section for anyone who's interested about sources. So I always update the sources that I have up there. And that includes cookbooks and academic books that I read, history, and then also just the blog posts with recipes for the modern cook.
What are you going to do with this project that you're working on now? Are you publishing?
Well, I hope to one day publish. I'm currently just an independent researcher. I'm not in a doctoral program. So one day I hope to do a doctoral program and write a dissertation on this history, because the book about Sephardic culinary history doesn't exist yet. And that I want to write that book. But I also hope to one day write a cookbook about Jewish food, because I think for my identity, my Jewish identity, a lot of it is expressed through food. And I think it's just this really amazing, powerful medium through which you can share and understand people and share stories. So that's what I hope to do one day.
Is there anything else you'd like to add that we might have left out?
No, I mean, I can add to the sources that I've used for my work. Some of them are interesting. They're accounts actually by rabbis, like these things called responsa, where people would write into their rabbi and be like, Rabbi, can I eat like chicken with cheese? Is that kosher? Things like that. And actually through those responsa, we get a window into like how Jews were eating back in the medieval Iberian Peninsula. including a stipulation on like Gentiles not being able to help produce wine or touch like dishes that would be then put in a communal oven. So things like that kind of reveal how food was a medium through which the different religious communities, the three Abrahamic religious communities of the medieval Iberian Peninsula, were interacting over food.
Has it been very hard for you to find the material, to find the sources?
Actually, no. I'm a very dogged searcher, and I do have to give a big shout out to Google Books, because with Google Books you can, you know, control F a page and go directly to see if somebody's mentioning Jewish people or the dish that you're looking for. And actually, it's, you know, going back to the thing that I said about the Sephardic legacy of a lot of Spanish dishes, there are tons of, maybe not tons, but several cookbooks that kind of span the centuries from about like 1500 going forward of Spanish food, of the food that was being made in palaces and in royal residences. And that's really cool because a lot of those dishes are Islamic in origin. They're Jewish in origin. They were being shared, you know, and these dishes are in Christian communities mostly, that they're, you know, the Catholic royals. They're using a lot of the same ingredients that their contemporaries were using, a lot of the same cooking styles, because people, I think what's cool about that period is that people, even if they ostensibly did not like each other, and there's a lot of things that people wrote saying, oh, like polemics about how I don't like these Jews, I don't like these Muslims, I don't like these Christians. At the same time, even if the coexistence wasn't like a happy one, there was coexistence. And so there was a lot of culinary sharing happening in that time. And you can go back to those sources. And even if they're Christian sources, you can still find out, okay, so this is a Jewish recipe, or this has Islamic ingredients with it. So there's a lot more sharing than, say, somebody who's studying pre-expulsion Spanish literature could understand, because then you're kind of dealing with people's opinions of other groups of people. Whereas with food, it's like all of these contradictions kind of seep into the dish. And if you're looking at the dish, it's like a secret window into people's daily lives and who they were actually interacting with.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you. So please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is EnglishCorner@RadioSefarad.com. See you next week.